I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast. My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
And we are the hosts of this fine podcast where we review all the comics that came out last week and let you know which are the comics that you should be reading too. Before we begin, I just want to insult Siobhan's snack buying abilities.
Ha ha ha.
I got to the office today. There's a whole bunch of new snacks and I love some snacks.
So absolutely.
I went to the snack corner. Mm-hmm. Amidst all of the regular cool snacks they have at King's Comics, just your run-of-the-mill Arnott's Bicky selection.
Absolutely.
Big fan, generally.
All the big ones. Mid-slice.
Siobhan has bought... I'll start at the least weird. This is really hard, actually.
Look, I raided the Korean snack section at the local Asian supermarket before Queens of Kings, as I usually do. I was trying to find the ones that sound like the weirdest or most delicious.
So you got crab and wasabi crackers?
They were pretty good.
Yeah, they're good. The fake seafoody taste is overwhelming.
Absolutely agreed.
And not really well paired to the wasabi taste.
Look, but they were the most edible.
That's very true. Then we have a big bag of cola flavored chips.
Yeah, they were bad. I thought they'd be funny, and I thought maybe they'd be salty and like just savory cola is like that's a thing, isn't it? Sometimes.
Yeah, it's like a vaguely salty chip covered in brown cola flavor.
It's bad.
I'm kind of into it, actually. I might bump that above the crab and wasabi crackers.
They made me feel sad. I didn't like them.
And finally...
the worst.
You got durian wafers.
Yeah.
Now, durian is a tropical fruit from Southeast Asia is pretty popular in most of Asia. Mm-hmm. It gets banned in a lot of... you know, there are big signs in Singapore on the train saying it's like no smoking, no like violence, no durians.
It's stinky. It's a stinky fruit.
They really, really stink. And I do like the taste of durian. Uh-huh. I was not expecting to crack open the box of durian wafers and for it to be as pungent.
Yeah, they're really gross. I think we're just going to have to throw them out into a bin outside of King's because it's really overwhelming the whole back office.
Yeah.
It's not nice.
I ate one and it tastes good while you're eating it, but the lingering taste of the fake durian is pretty
not tough. Worth it.
So I'm smashing some mint slices to get over that.
Yeah. You know what the best thing is? That I also got like a salty lychee drink.
Mm.
That was actually pretty good. That was good.
That's good.
That's probably the best thing I got.
I like Pekari Sweat.
Yeah, you know,
Japanese,
I've never had it.
It's good.
It's just like an electrolyte drink, right?
Yeah, but it's like slightly saltier than your average. It's good.
Mmm, delicious.
Yeah, that's snack report here on...
I'll do better next time.
You know what? It's definitely my turn. You bring snacks a lot. Even though it's not really for me, but you always buy such shit snacks.
There's always so many left
over from when I get here.
Everyone's like, why do you do this to us? They bring like nice things like cakes and chocolates and I'm like, eat this shit.
So Siobhan, on this episode, we're going to review all the comics that came out last week, starting with all the number ones. But
yes,
before
please.
We do that, there's something very cool happening at King's Comics next week.
Yes, next Monday. So the CEO, co-CEO of Archie Comics, a woman named Nancy Silberkleet, is coming in to give a talk for 1 hour at 6 p.m. I assume still at the 310 Pitt Street store, unless there is some dramatic changes. But really, guys, 310 Pitt Street. But it's going to be good fun. She travels around and she gives talks about comics and literacy, which is something that I care a lot about. And also bullying.
Uh-huh.
Gives talks about bullying, and she also she's created a new Archie character called Scarlet, who is on the autism spectrum.
Right.
Which is really cool. And so that's going to be really cool. So if you're a librarian, I really recommend coming along. Or if that just sounds interesting to you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the CEO of... CCO?
She's co-CEO of Archie Comics. Basically, she was married to the guy whose dad founded Archie Comics.
Right.
And then the dad died and her husband took over, and then he died and she took over, and then something hilarious happened and she no longer works in the Archie office. And she just travels around giving talks.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Well, if you want to come and see that go down, it's happening at King's Comics next Monday.
Yep. Monday the 3rd of September.
Most likely at 310 Pitt Street, Sydney. Head to kingscomics.com for more details.
Or the Facebook page. I don't think there's anything on our website.
God damn it, Siobhan. Sorry. Whose job is that?
I don't know.
Facebook.com/kingscomics?
Yep.
Cool. At least you know that.
Yeah.
That's important. We begin every episode of Serious Issues by reviewing all the number ones that came out last week, and there was a pretty good selection of them this week.
Yeah.
This segment's called First Things First, and we're going to kick it off with two Marvel number ones, the first of which is West Coast Avengers number one, starring Kate Bishop, a.k.a. Hawkeye, and written by Kelly Thompson, who wrote the most recent Hawkeye run featuring Kate Bishop, trying to make her way in L.A., West Coast Avengers, obviously set in California, LA specifically, and this book opens with Kate Bishop having to call on her friends to help her take down a bunch of land sharks.
Sharks with legs, yes please.
So immediately this is off to a fun and silly start. Mm-hmm. The rest of the team is America Chavez, Clint Barton, aka the original Hawkeye, who is on-again, off-again member of the team.
Mm-hmm.
We have Kate's boyfriend,
Fuse. Not a good name.
From the X-Men, we have Quentin Quire, a.k.a. Kid Omega. And finally, we have Gwenpool on the team.
Your Fever Dreams.
It's a very, very fun pink team.
Yes.
Lots of pinks and purples.
With great colors by Triona Farrell.
And, art by Stefano Caselli. And I was looking forward to this one. I grew to really like Thompson's Hawkeye run, in spite of not enjoying it to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Your glowing review, Siobhan, made me go back to it, and I really, really loved it. And was sad to see it end, so it's actually really cool to see this is a natural progression of that Hawkeye run. It's like, it feels like that same comic, but with like a bigger budget for more characters.
Absolutely.
Not that they're, you know, comics have budgets per se, but yeah. I really enjoy this. I like that it was like the stakes feel way lower.
Absolutely.
They're not saving the world. They're just kind of
stopping land sharks.
Exactly. And trying to get to the bottom of like, it's still like, there's still an element of like mystery solving, which
private
is important
investigation
to Hawkeye. I thought the dynamic of the team, especially having Gwenpool be like the main foil to Quentin Quire.
That works really well.
Works really, really well because like they're both pretty annoying characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like that's one of their main character traits, and for them annoying each other, it makes them very, very fun. This issue saw them go head-to-head against a gigantic version of Tigra, who was one of the original members of the first West Coast Avengers team.
Mm-hmm.
I
forgot the final page reveal as well.
The final page
that
reveal.
That really made me laugh.
Is very, very funny because this ties into, I guess, Gwenpool's backstory.
Okay.
With MODOK.
Yep.
That run that was written by Christopher Hastings that we both dropped early on, apparently that got really insane and meta. Yeah. Like Gwenpool, because she is someone that, like, her superpower is that she reads the comics. She's from our world. She knows it's a comic book. So when she finds out that her comic is being cancelled, she starts, like, upping the ante and, like, doing all these things to kind of make her be remembered as more than just a cancelled comic book character.
That's pretty fun.
I'm definitely going to go back and read it all.
Yeah, cool.
Because I really do like Hastings. I just, you know, at the time I was like, oh, I'm reading too many comics. Out of here.
Also, Gwenpool, shut up.
Yeah. At the end of this book, we meet BroDok, who is another gigantic guy. But BroDok stands for Biorobotic Organism Designed Overwhelmingly for Kissing.
Yes, please. funny. Like it.
Yeah, some good jokes in this. Great character relationships. And
I even like the slightly Bendis-y trope of having them being filmed by like a reality TV thing. But I think it works.
Yes, there's lots of talking heads to camera stuff. Yeah.
But I do think it works in this because I feel like with the Bender stuff, they were just talking heads to camera without it ever being properly explained. Whereas
totally.
It's like there is a legitimate reason for that to be happening. It's not just like, now the diary room.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely something that we've seen done in comics a lot over the years, but I feel like I haven't read like a new comic that did it in a while.
Yeah.
And this does it really, really well.
Yeah, I'm into it. I liked it a lot. The team's funny. Kate's great. Clint is always a delight.
And Thompson, like, not everyone is the same level of sassiness, which was my problem with the Hawkeye run when it started. And I feel like she really has become a much stronger writer at doing differently comedic characters in a comedy book.
Absolutely. All the voices are different.
Yep. So, yeah, highly recommend this one. It's great. Stefano Caselli's art is awesome.
Yep.
And Beautiful Colors by Tyrone Farrell. I'm into it.
Yep. Loved it.
Count me on board for this one.
Absolutely.
Now we move over to another Marvel number one that came out this week, and that is The Punisher number one, written by Matt Rosenberg, with art by someone who I'm not that familiar with, Simon Kudransky, and colors by Antonio Fabella.
Didn't he do that one about the light from Image?
The light from
Image. And everyone had to live underground because the sun was too hot or something.
I don't think that was him. Mm. I remember who wrote that, but we're going to have a look. What did he do? He's on Twitter.
Great. Great news.
He did some all-new Captain America. Damn it, where's your bio?
Come on, mate. Tell us what you did.
but yeah, the Punisher. This is Matt Rosenberg's most recent book that he was given. Because he gets given a lot of
one
books
of
over at Marvel. Yeah. And it's funny. I've come from, like, you know, absolutely loving him as a writer, obviously, with Four Kids Walk Into a Bank. And those two... Kingpin miniseries that he did, especially the first one, the Civil War one, which actually starred Frank Castle, aka the Punisher. That was incredible. One of my favorite things that I read the year that it came out. Certainly the best thing that came out of Civil War too.
Absolutely.
I just can't get into anything else that he's done in, like, the last year.
No, and it could partially be because he's writing so many books at Marvel.
Mm.
But yeah, I've been massively disappointed with a lot of his work over the last 12 months or so, and this is no different. I don't really care for his Punisher.
Well, so this...
I miss Becky Cloonan.
The one thing that he got right with this is that I think Punisher says, like, one line in this entire issue.
Yeah, it's good when you kind of don't see Punisher, like aliens.
Just this force of nature. And that's, like, you know, like Greg Rucka did a great job of that, and he's very
Rucka.
He did a very underrated Punisher run in which, like, Frank was seldom kind of seen or heard from. Very little dialogue, especially when he was attacking people. But here, this is like he's no longer hunting down, like, regular crooks in New York City, which is what many, many Punisher runs have been about. This is him stopping a dictatorship. Not so much like an allegiance between Baron Zemo,
the Mandarin,
and then the dude from Roxxon who can Agar.
Yeah.
It's very, very talky, which is funny because I just said how little the Punisher talks in this, like, one line. But what should be like I really enjoy his take on Zemo. Mm-hmm. I think he nails what Zemo should sound like in this, who is, like, you know, he's a, you know, a bad guy, probably a terrorist, but he has, like, almost like a weird code that he sticks to. I really enjoyed him, like, kind of doing things by the book, I guess, and having this agreement with Mandarin. The end of this book ends with Frank Castle shooting the Mandarin in the head.
Yes.
So he's probably dead. I don't know if I care.
I have one massive question, is why is there a random panel of Black Widow in the bath on the final page?
Is that who that is? Yeah, I guess
so. Yeah, because she's got her wrist shooty things. She took off her wrist shooty things directly next to the bath and just has them balanced on the side of the bath. But who is that?
We've also got Nick Fury in the top right corner.
Why isn't Nick Fury in the bath? Why the fuck is she in the bath?
Nick Fury doesn't take baths.
She never...
He has a big pack of wet wipes.
Towels himself down.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, but his eye patch is a wet wipe.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in that fucking ACO comic.
Where his eye patch could do everything.
Stupid eye patch can do whatever he wants. I
would love that. Do you need to use a shower, Nick? No, I'm good. And he takes off his eye. Yeah.
And it's just, the eye hole is just full of...
like a bidet.
Horrible. I meant like wet wipes come out of it. Anyway,
oh,
sorry.
Oh, like a dispenser.
Yeah, like a dispenser.
Oh, I love that. Someone draw that, please. Nick Fury pulling wet wipes out of his dispenser in his eye hole. Great.
They don't take advantage of that eye hole nearly enough. Anyway, why the fuck is Black Widow in the bath? Someone explain that to me.
Yeah, for no reason on the last page.
At no point during this, and then she's not even reacting to anything that happened in the comic. She's literally just in the bath. It's literally just a panel of Black Widow in the bath. Stop making female characters randomly have bars.
Stop making female characters clean.
I'm fine with it, but it's like you never get like fucking the Punisher having a shower with like just his butt covered by some soap bubbles. Anyway.
No, I totally agree with you. It's completely pointless. I didn't even realize that it was Black Widow. I was just like, why is there some random woman in the bath that we never didn't see in this issue?
You got some answers.
I'm kind of interested in what Zemo is going to do in this series. Give it another issue. But yeah, the art didn't do much for me. This artist, Simon Kodransky, he's done some Spider-Man stuff in the past and Green Arrow.
Okay.
But it's very photo
reference-y. I would like you to read one more issue to see if they explain why Black Widow was in the bath, but I'm not willing to do it.
Maybe Punisher has to like give her a rubber ducky or something. So those are the Marvel number ones for the week. Definitely sticking with one of them. Jury's out on the second.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Over to DC now for Batman Kings of Fear, written by, well, a true relic of the past. Written, and I guess well, it's by Scott Peterson with Kelly Jones. And Kelly Jones, of course, the Batman artist most famous for giving Batman the longest ears imaginable.
Yes, please.
Which I fucking love.
Absolutely. I love a big spiky ear.
We've got Michelle Madsen on colors on this. And this book just feels like a relic of the past. I loved it. Like,
absolutely loved it.
It's a really, really, like, because I used to collect just like random Batman and detective issues before I got proper into like picking up comics week to week.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought a lot of comics from the mid 80s. I love that era of Batman stories. And this just felt just like going back into
spooky,
that well.
Gothic detective stories. That's all I want.
And it's just, there's no like, you just know it's going to be done within six issues. Mm-hmm. And like there's something quite nice about the old runs like that. Of course, it is a treat to see Kelly Jones's art. Ugh. Yes, it's dated, like, but
in a good way.
In a really good way.
In a nostalgic way, not in a like, oh, this looks, I mean, it looks old, but like good.
Yeah.
The past was great.
So I guess this whole issue is going to be about like, you know, another issue in which, you know, who's the real criminal? Is it the criminals or is it Batman
for punching criminals in the face?
Yeah, because he punches them in the face, he shows them that violence is an answer.
And then they do more crimes. This last page is pretty wonky, though. I couldn't tell whether that was like intentional.
But I like the wonk.
He's like, yeah, I like a bit of wonk, but that's quite a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty wonky.
Also, he's got no penis.
Batman's got no penis. No. That's where he gets his wet wipes from. So yeah, I guess the whole
they're
thing
always useful
wet wipes. Yeah, they really are. Like I you know, I never used to carry them around before I had kids, but now that when they grow up, I'm still gonna have wet wipes on me.
Absolutely.
At all times. Like, I'm gonna have my eye removed.
It's just more useful,
guys. And also it makes more sense to have my dick removed, although I guess I made kids, so I'm good. Okay, Batman Kings of Fear. I'm on board for this series. It looks like, I guess, it's going to be a kind of like showdown between Scarecrow and Batman.
Yeah.
We don't see enough Scarecrow stories.
Absolutely.
And when they do, they make him too grisly. I just like him being like, oh, face your fears, Batman.
You're afraid of bats.
This panel's all wonky. I'm into it.
Yeah, I liked it.
Good Kelly Jones. Cold Spots is a Image number one, written by our good friend Cullen Bunn. Big fan of First Things First. Loves to feature in it as often as possible.
Absolutely.
This is a new series that he started in the horror genre, which
he loves a horror book.
Yeah, loves a short little horror book with Mark Torres on art on this one. It's called Cold Spots, and it is about ghosts that freeze people.
Okay.
Did you read it?
No.
All right.
I've refused to read any more Cullen Bunn books.
Because he puts out too many. Does it reset at the beginning of each year? And then as soon as he hits the 20 mark, you stop reading his new series?
I should probably do that, actually. But I just decided I can't be bothered anymore.
Does that look at there's a picture of Cullen Bunn at the end? Is that what kind of like what he looks like in your head?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I'd already seen pictures of him. So
right, sure.
That was firmly in my head.
What's up with like, I'm not going to finish that thought. don't need to critique how someone looks. It's just going to be about, you know, how many bald comic book writers there are.
Yeah.
I did finish that thought.
There you go. It might be because they're all men.
Cold Spots is a book about ghosts that freeze people with the cold powers.
Super-duper.
And there's a mystery and someone's trying to figure out. It's fine.
Yeah.
Someone gets hired at the beginning to find a missing daughter of a, someone that he used to work for. I don't know. It's like it does the bare minimum to keep me interested. Mm. But sometimes you got to do more.
Absolutely.
Which is what issue number one of Beasts of Burden, Wise Dogs and Eldritch Men by Evan Dorkin, Benjamin Dewey and Nate Piekos did this week over at Dark Horse. You're a big fan of the Beasts of Burden.
Love Beasts of Burden.
So I've only read random one-shots. I've never read... I know that the first series is only 4 issues long, so...
Yeah, it's mostly random one-shots. Every, like, I want to say once a year or every so often, sometimes around, like, Halloween, they'll put out a one-shot or a mini-series.
But essentially, it's a supernatural series about talking animals, specifically mm-hmm. dogs.
Yep.
But there's cats as well. And all manner of talking animals.
They all live in Burden Hill, which is chock full of occult nonsense.
And when this started, it was had art by Jill Thompson, mm-hmm. you might be familiar with. But yeah, Benjamin Dewey does this now.
And he does a great series. Job.
Apparently Jill Thompson, because as soon as I finished this issue, I was like, I love this shit so much. And there's a sale on Comixology at the moment. Mm-hmm. And you can buy all their issues that exist, which is only like, I think like 11 all up, including the one-shots, for $1 each.
Great.
So go on and get that.
Go do it. Jill Thompson's art is glorious.
There's a trade. If you buy the trade version, which is $4, that comes with all of the Dark Horse Presents short stories that led into the series. So I highly recommend you pick up that. It's a great series. It's really, really cheap to get into because there's not that many issues before mm-hmm. it, but it feels like there's so much lore. Tell me more about this series for those who don't know much about it.
It's just a bunch of dogs who solve occult crimes, pretty much.
Yeah, unreal.
So if you like, I'm trying to think of what else it could be similar to, like.
Animals of Farthingwood.
Yeah. Hellboy crossed with Animals of Farthingwood.
That's actually really apt. We nailed it.
And it's the thing that I really like about it is it's totally straight. Like, it's not like, they're funny, cute doggies or anything. They're just dogs, but they're like...
Really well-spoken dogs. And mm-hmm. like, you could just replace all of these characters with people.
Exactly. Absolutely. And so in this issue, there is a salamander on the loose in Burden Hill, and the dogs have to go in to stop the fire and stop the salamander putting things on fire. But there is more to it than it seems, and someone is fucking around with magic. And so the dogs need to put an end to it. And they all sort of have different specialties. And stuff like that.
Yeah. You know,
some of them are magic users. Some of them are other things. It's cool. I love it.
And some of them are kind of like more doggish than the others. Uh-huh, like, you know, you have like, I guess like the bigger the dog, the dumber they are kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is very apt.
Absolutely.
I really love this. So much so that I went back and got everything that it didn't have from this series. And I look forward to keeping up with this new miniseries too.
Yeah. It's just one of those, it's one of those series that every time it comes out, it is a delight. And I love that Evan Dorkin keeps coming back to these characters in this world that he's made. Because it's always great. Good fun.
Evan Dorkin is doing that other book at the moment with Veronica Fish, which is called...
Oh yeah, the one about the university, Blackwood.
Blackwood. Something yeah, like it's really, really good. And he's good at writing these kind of like... things with horror elements and magic elements that aren't really magic or horror books.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like fun, kind of classic feeling comics.
And also good like characters.
Definitely.
Always good characters.
Real good stuff. So it's called Beasts of Burden, Wise Dogs and Eldritch Men is the latest in this miniseries. Go check it out.
Love doggies. Get it.
Who doesn't love doggies?
Who doesn't love
monsters,
doggies?
That's who.
Absolutely.
Siobhan, if you want to discuss any of the comics that we've talked about so far, you can do so over at facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. We can join our many thousands of comic book reading listeners mm-hmm. in discussing the episode, plus all the comics that we talk about on the show. If you disagree with us, let us know. If you agree with us, also let us know. We love talking with all of our listeners, and there's a great community over there.
Absolutely.
And so much so that sometimes they send us very useful gifts, including a 3-sided die, for example, which one of our listeners, Brad, sent us because...
The Love Meister.
After we do. That's real good. After we do First Things First each week, we then roll the dice to figure out which publisher we talk about next. And right now I'm going to roll a image first. So we're going to do image first. And then after that, we're going to do... Fuck, I keep rolling image. God damn it, image.
Okay, only DC. Talking about image.
We're going to do image, then DC, then Marvel.
Okay, cool.
So let's start with the finale of Jeff Lemire, who was a very busy boy this week. Jeff Lemire's Royal City.
Jeff Lemire is like the good version of Cullen Bunn. Continue.
Yeah. He's also like a fucking hero this week.
Yeah.
Jeff Lemire this week released 4 issues of comics, all of mm-hmm. which we'll talk about in this episode. in fact, every one of the next segments, Image, Marvel, DC, and other publishers have a Jeff Lemire book featured in them.
Yep.
But he also wrote a really, really touching piece, both on Twitter and on his website, essentially condemning people who are part of Comicsgate. Not so much the people that are just kind of part of it because they think it's a good thing because it leads to more people reading comics.
Mm-hmm.
That group is very, very mired in excluding certain people from being part of the comic buying and enjoying and creating community, and they've sent a lot of angry people to people who write comics that we're fans of.
Or even the widows of people.
Yeah, totally.
Who write comics.
And I think a lot of, because of how enormous this, well, not so much enormous, but just how loud this group of people are.
Obnoxious.
A lot of bigger creators have kind of, silently ignored what's going on and not really spoken up against it or acknowledged it. And so I guess some of them think that certain creators support them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool to see Lemire this week come out and essentially say, like, don't stand for this shit. Talk up against it.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Also, it's not good enough to just, fave tweets. say something.
Yes.
Do something.
Totally. And multiple creators have since come out. Big ones like Tom Taylor and Bill Sienkiewicz and lots of others. It's been cool. But, yeah, it's a big step because Lemire mentions are now 50% angry American jerks.
Teens. Teen boys.
No, mostly older guys. Someone posted a picture of the latest issue of Gideon Falls in their toilet.
You still bought an issue. Yeah. You still bought a copy. Do whatever you also want with it, mate.
How did you get the issue of Gideon Falls out of your toilet?
Yeah.
Is it still there?
It's blocked his sister.
Yeah.
Just to make a point.
Either way, you either blocked your toilet or you had to put your hand in your toilet.
And also, It's a good comic. Now you're going to end up in the Black Barn.
Yeah, that's right. That's how this works. Anyway, that's another Jeff Lemire book. Let's talk about Royal City, issue number 14.
This made me cry, proper tears.
Yeah. But because it's a surprisingly happy ending for this very, very, sorrowful collection of people who make up the family in Royal City.
I was so thrilled that they got a happy ending and they got closure and all those things. I was so emotional.
So this series, when it started, Royal City, written and drawn by Jeff Lemire, Lemire said that he envisaged this going for a good 40 issues, just like Sweet Tooth did his comic for Vertigo. But there's a big letter at the end here where he just realized that this is taking up too much of his headspace and affecting him. So he decided to kind of change the ending and have it end sooner.
Mm, and also he saw a good ending for it. A
yeah.
Nice, convenient ending.
And I don't, there was no point in this series where I thought it was rushed or.
Absolutely not.
This doesn't feel like we've been cheated out of something.
Nope.
I think this ends in a really, really beautiful way. Like you said, it's very emotionally affecting and gives you a lot of closure for these characters that even though we've only spent 14 issues with them, we got to know most of this family very, very well.
Mm.
Certainly all of their dark secrets as well as the main parts of their character.
Mm-hmm.
This is an excellent series.
Absolutely. And really satisfying ending and so gorgeously illustrated and coloured by Lemire. It's so lovely when he gets to sort of do the whole thing himself and we get to see the sort of finished product that he had in mind. And it's wonderful that there is space for comics like this in a mainstream big publisher that sell massive quantities and stuff. That's gives me hope.
Yeah. I love Lemire as a writer. I especially love him when he draws his own books.
Yeah.
And I hope that, I think that he works best is when because all my favorite Lemire books are that he drew are the graphic novels, especially Essex County.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that, now that he's given this up, I would love to get, it would be such a treat. I know it's such a massive ask to get a Lemire graphic novel once a year or something like that. Because that's where I think he really excels.
Who knows? I mean, he seems to be working constantly. And in the back of Royal's, the letter that he writes, he's even talking about doing new things and sort of other genres. And there's even a ad for a new book that he's doing with Phil Hester, which looks great.
Yeah, he's writing a ton at the moment.
So I'm just
I love that Lemire
constantly
art too.
In awe of what he does.
Yeah, definitely. He's an amazing creator. This was definitely the best of the four issues that he put out this week, only because it was such an excellent bow around a great series that I highly recommend everyone check out. Royal City.
Just a gorgeous, bittersweet family drama.
Does this qualify for maybe a deep dive? Maybe at some point. We'll see.
Maybe.
We could do a bonus episode about Royal City. Let us know if you're keen on that over in the group. What else did we both read?
I read both of those.
Okay, great. Die, 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 issue number 2. This is the surprise image book written by Robert Kirkman and Scott M. Gimple with art by Chris Burnham and Nathan Fairbairn.
I like that they're doing this thing where all of the speech bubbles, they have like how many different variant covers, but it's just the speech bubble is different.
Oh, right. So the front cover of mine features a noseless main character from our series saying, "You want to just talk it over? Your dead body."
Nice. What does mine says, "Is this the face of a man who goes down without a fight?" Which it's a good point.
Yeah.
If you've got no nose, I'm going to approach this fight more gingerly than I otherwise
would. Just no nose, a nose that has been freshly cut off with blood still pouring out of your wound.
This is a very gory comic.
Well, here's the thing.
Okay.
I never really talk about it. I have a love of animated and cartoon gore.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just, especially when
I can't deal with like Tarantino movies.
I can. I also love gore in general. I know, it's like
that's
one,
really surprising. I didn't
yeah, I know it's
that.
Not like one of my things. Like yeah. I'm never going to go on and on about it, but like I find it amusing,
when
especially
it's
when it's
right,
over the top.
Great.
And I find Tarantino, like you know, what's the most recent one, The Hateful Eight. I found all the gore in that like so funny.
Yes, I find it too much.
Right.
I need to watch between my fingers. But if it's like cartoon, I'm okay with it.
And Chris Burnham, you know, even on his Batman book, there was always big splashes of blood when Batman punched someone in the face. This one features multiple characters cutting their noses off. Dino Die is about three men that were triplets that were raised as assassins. They all, as they grow into men, they are separated. In the first book, one of them was kidnapped, and two of them go after their brother. With, I guess, the intention that we assume at the beginning is that for both of them to rescue their brother, but we learn that one of them has a different motive. I don't love I love the plotting of this.
Yeah.
I find the story of this book really, really
very
fun.
Very compelling and really fun.
And it makes, and I love Burnham's art. It's it's perfectly suited to his style of artwork.
Very close to a Dong Watch, but no dice.
No Dong Watch.
Weak.
Dong Watch
cowards.
Yeah. But I don't love the dialogue. I think the dialogue is like Mark Miller-esque for me.
I still like it. I think it's silly. It doesn't quite... Like, I find Mark Miller dialogue so like genuinely unappealing. I
sure.
quite like these characters.
Yeah.
I quite like the sort of holier-than-thou long-haired assassin one.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And I like the... explosion specialist, but I think like Chris Burnham's art really sells every single joke, every single gag, every single like the moment where the gore goes from being funny to being unbelievably like serious and horrible. Such an intense panel. It's so good. He's so good. He's so perfectly suited to this book.
Yeah.
And it's really great that Image and Skybound, you know, there's a letter from Chris Burnham in the back and they talk about how it was so cool they were able to keep it a secret because it meant they got to go so far ahead. He got to really spend time on each issue and really get it to the point where he was happy with it and he was pleased with the art. And it also meant that they got to have a bunch of merchandise ready to go at Comic-Con, which is cool.
Yeah, super cool.
I like these characters. I like the sort of female politician who's just like a mess and getting all of the senators to give her head under her desk and like drinking. It's just like, it's a nice reversal of that sort of trope.
Yep.
I like a female character who's allowed to be messy and difficult.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first Robert Kirkman book that I'm really like. I really, really like this. I really enjoy this.
Well, that's awesome. Great.
Yeah,
cool.
I'm pleased.
Die, Die, Die. Two issues in. Give it a chance. Shanghai Red.
Notice it says, "Holy crap, that guy's nose is totally cut off" on the front.
Shanghai Red, issue number 3. This is the pirate book, written by Christopher Sabella, with art by Joshua Hickson, colors by Hassan Otsman Elhau.
I would say it's more of a revenge book than a pirate book, but yes.
Initially, it was about a pirate.
It was.
Basically, a woman poses as a man, and many years ago, while drunk, she was thrown into
a cell.
She was
shanghaied, as it's known.
Yep, and she was shanghaied and then woke up on a ship going out to sea in which she had to basically be a slave. You're right, she wasn't really a pirate. She was a slave on a boat.
Now she's back.
Back, and she's got revenge. Her family and the town that she left is very different from when she left it. And this is kind of like, in one hand, like her, like a revenge book, her getting her revenge, but she's kind of terrible at it.
Yeah. She's a mess.
At the end of this issue, she has to jump back down in the same tunnels
that she
was taken to a boat on, which is pretty confronting for her to do. I like this a lot.
I still like this a lot.
Yeah.
I wish there are moments where I wish the art was a little bit more clear, just because sometimes I'm like, I'm not sure who that character is. I'm not sure what exactly is going on. But the story's great. It's really funny. No, it's not funny at all. Sorry, I don't know why I said that. It's not funny. It's horrible.
There's not one joke.
There's no jokes. But I like it. It's compelling.
Actually, you know what? The woman who owns the bar has some good jokes.
Yes, true.
Yeah, she's a good character.
But yeah, I like this.
Yeah, me too. I think the art really suits the story. I get what you mean. Some of his facial work is a little hard to decipher.
I do like the art. There are just a couple of moments where I'm like, oh, just for clarity, I wish there was a little bit more differentiation between the way the characters looked or something like that.
Yeah, cool.
But other than that, it's killer.
Awesome. What are you got another more image book for us?
Yes, I read Aphrodite 5 by Brian Hill and Jeff Spokes.
That's Aphrodite 5, issue number 2.
Issue 2, yes, sorry. And so this is like a classic Top Cow character brought back. And this story arc is about, there's a guy and he made some robots or something, and then some terrorists went to like shut down the school that he ran, and there were all these kids, and then she goes in and saves them. And she's a robo too. But it's actually really good. I'm doing a terrible job of explaining it, but I love Brian Hill. I think he's like one of the best at, like, it was cool. I got a Brian Hill double barrel bill this week.
My favorite is when you when you review a book that I've not read. I don't know what happens.
I just fall apart. I have no idea what happened.
You just describe what happens on every page as quickly as you can, and then suddenly it's the end, and then you're like, oh, you don't remember what you said about it. I love it.
Anyway. Jeff Spokes' art is like really great and like moody and inky. I think it really suits it. It kind of reminds me of almost like Checkmate, something like that. It's got sort of that government spy agency overtones, but in this kind of ludicrous over the top.
I love the
superhero universe.
The choice of colors, how every two pages is kind of like a chosen color.
Yes, absolutely. And so we're just following this character Aphrodite as she sort of figures out who she is and what her new purpose is, because she doesn't want to just be a killer anymore. She wants to be a killer with purpose. But it's good. I think Brian Hill writes really compelling dialogue, and the action sequences are great, and I really like this.
Cool.
It's good. Unreal. I've heard good things about the other Aphrodite books, but I've never read them.
That's it for Image. Now we move over to DC, and we'll start with issue number 1002.
Yes, please.
It's a fun number to say. Of Action Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, with art by Patrick Gleason, who just gets better and better. I don't know. Like, I loved all of his work that he did with Tomasi on,
this is
like
my favorite stuff,
Green Lantern and Superman and Batman and Robin. But I don't know what, it's like just slightly different, and it makes such a difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm really into it. Alejandro Sanchez on colors on this one. And this continues the story of... it's crazy. I keep getting Superman and Action confused. Yeah. I think I might prefer Action a little bit more, maybe because of Gleason. Yeah,
I think so.
But this one deals mostly with the gangs who have been basically trying to like frame Superman for these first it's fires, and in the beginning of this issue, Superman drops a villain to his death, or someone dressed as Superman. What's cool about this is we're spending a lot of time at the Daily Planet in both of Bendis's Superman books, and he's really fleshing out all of his characters. I love Perry White,
absolutely,
and all of these new kind of reporters that Superman's co-workers.
We also get to see like Cat Grant,
she comes back,
people like that.
Speaking of another flashback, we get the Guardian showing up. Last seen in Seven Soldiers, maybe the Grant Morrison.
He's shown up in a couple of things since then, but he's not been used appropriately.
Massive in the 90s, like an underpowered, sorry, a not powered hero in Metropolis, who has a big old gold shield. But he gets the shit beat out of him.
He sure does. By a Red Cloud.
Red Cloud, yeah.
Fuck that Red Cloud.
Superman tries to get some answers out of him when he's in hospital. It's cool. This is like a crime book, but with Superman.
Yeah.
And it works
every
really well.
Every now and again, he's like, I need to go into space and punch an asteroid because I'm angry.
I know, it's inevitable,
yeah.
But I'm looking forward to Bendis writing a proper mystery over at Batman.
Ooh.
I kind of would like to see him do like an actual crime book in the Batman universe.
I'd like to see him do like a Gotham City Police Department.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Yeah. I just want that back. I want Gotham Central back.
It was good. I'm enjoying Superman more than I have in a really long time, I think.
Yeah. It's real good stuff.
As far back as I can remember.
Lois is keeping a secret from Superman too, which is the kind of...
We thought she was in space.
But she's not in space. She's even wearing a blonde wig and pretending to be somebody else.
Yeah. I don't know how much... Like, how did she get away with that? I feel like Superman would notice. Say,
how did she get a wig?
Where'd she find that wig?
What? In the DC universe, you can just go to a shop and buy new hair? Is that what's going on in this universe? Are we supposed to believe that?
What kind of a bullshit superpower is that? No, I feel like Superman would have been like, oh, I've noticed that Lois is back in Metropolis because of all of my superpowers.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, she somehow got away with
my ability to hear heartbeats.
There is a very funny, I like, this is like a stupid thing that I like, but in the front page, they actually have a fucking recap page, which you never get in DC Comics, which is great. But also, we get like all of these post-its around Clark's sort of computer at the Daily Planet, and there's some pretty funny ones like, reminder, return Bruce's wedding gift.
Yeah, totally funny. Is KG Beast tied to election hacking?
Yeah, Jim Lee called.
Remind Bendis eye appointment. talk with Perry, re-smell.
Yeah.
I'm into it. It's good.
Batmite conspiracy. Follow up. Love it.
Look, Ben is still doing great stuff over at in the Superman world.
Yeah. Loving it.
Over in the Batman world, though, we have the final issue of Brian Edward Hill. It's Edward. I finally figured out his actual... I kept saying Michael.
Yeah.
It's Edward. Brian Hill's final issue of Detective Comics, featuring art by Miguel Mendoza and Mendoza? I don't know. And Diana Eger on inks and Adriano Lucas on colors. But we learned this week that this whole arc was him setting up a new Batman and the Outsiders book,
yes,
which
please.
You pretty much almost called.
The second Black Lightning and Katana are in a book, you're like, okay, where's Geo-Force?
So Brian Hill is writing a Batman and the Outsiders book featuring, is it this team?
You got to assume
so,
right?
Batman, Duke, Katana, Black Lightning, and Batgirl, and Orphan, aka Cassandra Cain. In this, we see them. They don't actually team up in this. It's basically like Batman takes down this dumb new bad guy who
called Karma.
Read everybody's minds. He takes him down by himself, but it's, I don't know, it was kind of just like a nice little wrap up to this arc. Really solid arc, and shows that Brian Hill has he's a good grasp of all the characters involved.
Especially Black Lightning.
Yeah.
Apparently Lynn was saying, 'cause she's a big Brian Hill fan, she was saying that all the research he did, she was like, he read one Black Lightning series and watched the TV show, and he was like, cool, I've got it. He's a teacher and a superhero. Bam, nailed it. But he's just so good. He's so good at superhero comics.
Yeah.
Is that where Geo-Force is from? Markovia? Jim, do you remember Geo-Force?
Yeah, he's from there.
Yeah, cool.
He's from Markovia. There you go.
Excellent. He's the Prince of Markovia. I think that means we're going to get Geo-Force because there's bad guys in Markovia, and that's what the Outsiders are going to be investigating.
So, yeah.
Anyway, I love Geo-Force.
We get James Robinson is the next writer to do an arc in Detective.
Oh, good. When was the last time he did something good?
I don't know. A while ago. Airboy.
Yeah.
Did you read that ever?
Yeah, it was good.
Image? Awesome series. If you want to follow Brian Hill's continuation of this story, Batman and the Outsiders comes out towards the end of the year. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, same.
Now we go over to the new Age of Heroes, Siobhan, and we got issue 7 of The Terrifics and issue 8 of The Silencer, the two new Age of Heroes books that we both stuck with. Mm-hmm. They both come out the same week every month, and they both have a never-ending revolving list of artists, which is weird because when this whole thing started, it was, and they favor artists over writers, and that was like the whole point of this series.
They're like, oh no, but also they're interchangeable.
Yeah, it's very weird. They credit all the artists first on the front covers before the writer, but this is the fourth artist in 7 issues of The Terrifics. We have Dale Eaglesham.
I like Dale Eaglesham.
Doing great. Oh, I like all the artists almost. Doing great work in this, but it is just weird.
It's annoying.
We had Joe Bennett last month, then we had 2 issues from Shayna and Ivan Reyes at the start.
Fucking bring back Shayna.
The Silencer has its third artist in 8 issues. It's credited to Bogdanovich on the front, but that's not Bogdanovich.
It's a Bogdanovich cover.
Right. We have
the rest of it.
Patch Zercher, who is good.
Yeah.
Do you know this?
I didn't like it as much. I feel like a lot of the charm of Silencer is down to what Bogdanovich has done. And I feel like this made it a much more average comic book.
Yeah, that's true.
This was like fine.
So we should talk about issue 8 of The Silencer first. Yeah, written by Dan Abnett. Of course, this originally launched with John Romita Jr. art, which was like some of his strongest work in years. And mm-hmm. then we got Victor Bogdanovich mm-hmm. taking over. And I really enjoyed his style mm-hmm. on the book. Pat Surcher is a very much of a kind of like classic... he's a really, really solid comic book artist.
He's fine.
But not someone that you would put on after two very stylized artists.
Yeah. I think he does a good job of her costume
mm-hmm.
and like Quietus and like those sorts of big bad guys. But I think the bits with her family look really...
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Bizarre, and I think that the look that Bogdanovich had developed, it just really worked, and it was like the voice of this comic for me.
Sure.
And so I just felt like this was still fine, but it just wasn't as good as I expect it to be all the time.
I feel like in superhero books, it's very rare that we see the secret identity be such a big factor
in a
story now. Like, so few of them even give a fuck about it.
Yeah.
Now, since like the MCU is so big, like there's barely any Marvel heroes that have secret identities. Yeah. But it's cool to see it be so important to this story, integral, because basically the Silencer has given up being the Silencer. Mm-hmm. She just wants to be a mum and mm-hmm. have a family.
Absolutely.
When her old underworld assassin life comes back to haunt her, she needs to kill everybody, basically, so that she can go back to living her quiet, nice life.
Absolutely. And this issue has a Freaky Friday in it.
Yes, totally. She and another assassin, Quietus, get Freaky Friday'd
by magic.
Because the magical arm of Leviathan, mm. who are the big kind of like League of Assassins run by Talia al Ghul, the girl who runs the magic arm of Leviathan is like, no one ever takes this seriously, and so she's fucking around.
So
with
I'm gonna Freaky Friday,
you
guys.
Yeah, it's just great, and like, you know, you have her. She's tricked her family into going to like this superhero theme park, mm-hmm. which is near where Leviathan are based.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sneaks off when they go on roller coasters and makes out like she's going to go, you know, get a tan or whatever. Yeah. And the family are kind of like starting to go like, hey, why you keep fucking off?
You don't want to spend time with us on this family holiday?
But it's cool. It's a really, really good book. It still surprises me how much I enjoy this book.
Yeah, same. I do still really enjoy it. I just would like Bogdanovich to come back, please.
The Terrifics this week gave us issue number 7 with art by Dale Eaglesham, written by Jeff Lemire. That's the second book so far by Lemire mm-hmm. on this episode. In the first issue of this series, which was kind of pitched as a Fantastic Four mm-hmm. tribute from DC, featuring Mr. Terrific and Plastic Man and
Metamorpho
and Phantom Girl, we saw Tom Strong. Give like they receive a message from Tom Strong at the start of this series, and the bulk of this issue is a fight between Tom Strong and one of his longtime enemies, then he gets trapped in a big tree.
Yeah.
And the Terrifics kind of come to save, while looking for him, have to face basically save Tom Strong. It's a really fun venture book. Dale Eaglesham is totally like in the right realm of artists who should have been on this book from the start. Not Ivan Reis.
Absolutely.
Reis. I miss Shayna, but like I would happily, I wish it was like 2 issues from Shayna, 2 issues from Eaglesham, 2 issues, like, because he's got a really classic kind of throwback style that still has so much fun with, like, you know, basically like Plastic Man is so integral to this group. Like what an artist does with the character of Plastic Man and his weird transformations. And there's a brilliant panel of Plastic Man just like sitting, lying down on his bed, looking at his phone, all
fully
sad.
Relaxed.
And he's just like this
puddle
of arm.
Yeah.
It's great.
And he knows how to draw like a hilarious, like beefy, handsome dude.
Yes, definitely.
I'm into it.
So yeah, like not quite as fun story-wise as previous issues have been, but this book's still on the right track.
Absolutely.
I'm enjoying it. Good stuff. You got some more that I didn't read?
Yeah. Well, I read Wonder Woman issue 53, which is the final issue of Steve Orlando's in-between thing, I think.
I've got to take this home and read this little arc because you said I really enjoy it, huh?
So this has art by ACO, inks by David Lorenzo, colors by Romulo Fiardo Jr.
Nice.
And this is... like the best Wonder Woman comics since Greg Rucka left.
Awesome.
100%. This like little 3-issue arc has been very, very good. So the first issue was not even in this arc, but I think Steve Orlando has a really good grasp of the character. And it's been really good fun. So these 2 issues has just been Wonder Woman teamed up with Artemis and a new female Aztec to fight an Incan god. And it takes full advantage of ACO's really out there pop arty style. He draws the hell out of a cool Wonder Woman.
That's great.
It involves a whole bunch of cool like Wonder Woman lore that I love, and I love Aztec as a character, and I love this new female Aztec, and just like design wise, it's so gorgeous and so fun, and this was just great. I wish Steve Orlando had more time on this series because this is so good, so much better than James Robinson's run as well.
Yeah.
I loved it.
That's great.
Yeah, really loved it.
Man, those panels look so good.
Yeah,
okay,
it's
gorgeous. I'm going to binge all this tonight.
I really highly recommend picking up 51 to 53 of Wonder Woman because it is great.
And does that mean we get G. Willow Wilson next issue?
I don't know. Oh, maybe not. Maybe this is still going.
Oh, cool.
I have no idea. Anyway, it's great.
Great stuff. It's good to see Steve Orlando doing good shit again.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
Real cool. Holy shit. Wow, that was so fast.
That's so good. Wayne drew us Nick Fury pulling a wet wipe out of his eye socket. That's gorgeous.
I want to frame that. That's an excellent picture.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wayne's good.
You did that. And the caption is Sergeant Kleenex Fury. The pun could have been better.
Thanks, man.
Like Kleenex Fury could have been good.
That was...
it's all right, bro. Just draw me another one. Thank you, Wayne. I will definitely put this on the website. If you want to see this brilliant picture, either head to seriousissues.tumblr.com or facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. That is so fucking good.
So good, man. That's so funny. I love it.
Thank you, Wayne. So finally from DC this week, we have Mother Panic, Gotham AD, the last book in this initial run of Young Animal books. Mm-hmm. So it's almost officially over. I think we are getting new issues of Doom Patrol.
Oh, good.
But there's no other kind of other Young Animal books anymore, which is a bummer because most of them are very, very good.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
This was one of the ones that was very good. Written by Jody Houser, with art by Ibrahim Mustafa and colors by Jordan Boyd. These last 6 issues, I did not like anywhere near as much as I liked the first 12.
I still liked them.
But I enjoyed it. Basically, it's like kind of her own... This final issue is called Different Bat Channel, which I thought was cute.
Yeah.
On the same bat time, same bat channel. But yeah, so basically she's in another DC universe in which Jason Todd is kind of like become a crime lord.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of Batman villains and different versions of them. A lot of them die. It's been a pretty gruesome 6 issues. So she's teamed up with a young girl called Fennec Fox. And
her mum.
Her mum, yeah. And she comes face to face with this world's version of herself in this final issue.
I sort of almost like as well that the end result of this isn't her being like, I need to get back to my own universe. She's like, oh, there's good I can do here in this universe. So she stays.
I thought
that was like a nice change. I really liked this arc. I liked the little family that they built up. And I wish I wish there was more.
Yeah, me too. Maybe that's the, I have the same feeling I did after I finished that Shade, the Changing Woman, issue number six, where I'm like, oh, I want, this doesn't wrap up.
I want this to go forever.
Exactly. I want this longer. And yeah. I think this, especially that, like, I did want her to go, I know you just said how good it was that she didn't go back, and I hear you, but I loved what that, what the world she came from was.
Yeah.
I loved Ratcatcher, and I loved, like, you know, the garden that her mother lived in, and her villains over there, and, you know, her coexisting with the regular DC universe. So her being here, I think I would have enjoyed more if she went back.
I know what you mean. I would just enjoy to see loads more. And yeah, I love the art. I feel like Mustafa really found his groove towards the end of this arc, especially. I'm really sad to see the end of this. Also, was yours printed really poorly?
Yeah, really, really bad printing on this issue.
I feel like DC don't give a
fuck. Well, I think they just sent the wrong files or something like that. So we have some...
really poor resolution.
Yeah, that's right.
Very annoying.
Real bad. That is it from DC. Now we move over to Marvel. Oh boy, big Marvel week. And I definitely forgot to read a few things, but it's because it was an enormous Marvel week. There's only so many Marvel books I can take home.
Absolutely.
I've got 10 here or something like that. Let's start with ones that I haven't read.
All right.
I did not read Mr. and Mrs. X.
Why? You hate fun?
I just forgot. And I really want this. It's another one I'm going to steal.
So this is by Kelly Thompson with art by Oscar Belbazaldua. Anyway. Sorry. Rogue and Gambit are on their honeymoon in space, which could obviously never go wrong. And it's been crashed by Deadpool, hilarious, who loves Rogue but loves money more, and who wants to steal the... they were entrusted by the X-Men to take this, like, shiny rock to somewhere in space.
That's right.
And then the rock turns out to be a shiny egg in space. And Deadpool wants it because there's a huge...
chicken.
There's a huge chicken in it. No. There's a huge bounty for delivering it somewhere. And so this is mostly Rogue and Gambit fighting Deadpool with some, like, very funny dialogue. And then we also get see TechNet, the really fucking weird space bounty hunter.
Oh, that's right, group. Yep.
Including, like, the weird baby Joy Boy. So I feel like Kelly Thompson is just having a good time with this. It's very silly, it's very funny, and I like and then the egg hatches and it's a clone of Rogue. What?
Wow, what the hell?
And it says, next, not more clones and golems. No, it's way weirder than that. So I'm excited to see what is that?
Rogues come from eggs, everybody.
Absolutely.
That's how, if you want a rogue, you got to hatch an egg.
The lovely Nate and I were talking this morning about what... because I was saying that the X-Men sound... like Rogue and Gambit sound like the versions from the animated series in my head.
Oh, right. Sure.
Do you have that?
Yeah. I guess... yeah, them in particular.
Yeah. Those in particular.
I don't think anyone else. Oh, and maybe Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So iconic.
Yeah. I need to read this one tonight. I think Kelly Thompson's doing good stuff over at
Marvel. She's so great.
Let's keep things X for a minute, and we'll talk about X-Men Red, issue number 7, written by Tom Taylor, with art by Carmen Carnero and Rain Barreto on colors. This issue sees the team led by Jean Grey try and save an attack on Atlantis, while the rest of the team... what's really great is that there's one character who has like a connection to a Sentinel, and she basically can control the Sentinel, so the Sentinel is her friend and is good. But when they're on a plane trying to find something on a plane, she gets shot and the connection to her Sentinel is severed and the Sentinel crashes on the plane.
That was a good moment.
Really, really clever use of, you know, everything that's been set up so far.
And there appear to be, like, nano-sentinels that are infecting people's brains. Is that what they are?
That's right, yeah.
That are causing people to just flip out and be like, there's a mutant, kill a mutant.
Yes.
Pew, pew, pew.
And I think, yeah, this is a bit of a slower series, but enough happens in each issue. I just like that, like, when, you know, a lot of Tom Taylor's books do this, where, like, he's set up everyone really, really well, and now, like, these great events happen with the characters, you know, in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it's a classic Tom Taylor. I like it. And Carmen Canero does a good job of aping Mahmoud Azra's style that he developed for these book.
Cool.
Looks good.
Yeah. I enjoyed this series. I also like that Jean Grey is just like, she's almost like Superman.
Yeah.
In that she's just kind of like this moral good character. I don't think I've seen that take on her before. Like, she's not like complaining all the time, which is what
it's people often do with Jean Grey. It's more like she was in New X-Men, Grant Morrison's, where she's kind of like the leader.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Which is cool. I like her in that role.
I enjoy this take on her. I like this. This is good.
Mm.
Just a solid X book.
And man, those covers. Jenny Frisson covers, I believe.
Are they Frisson?
I don't know. But anyway, they're lovely.
Shouldn't it just say on the front cover?
Should.
In the inside? Man cover, Jenny Frison. Very good. Good work. Good guess.
I'm very smart.
Have you got any other X-books this week? Not really. I don't think so.
No.
No. Okay. Well, let's talk about... what else did you read? Moongirl and Devil Dinosaur. That was an excellent book this week.
Yes, please. So... Devil Dinosaur has accidentally been turned into an 8-year-old boy.
Called Devin. So it's actually now called Moon Girl and Devin Dinosaur. And Lunella, aka Moon Girl, is like pretending like he's her friend from Canada, which explains his weird behavior as he tries to fit in at school. And they did some great work with Kingpin's newly adopted daughter.
Princess.
Princess.
I love her. That's such a funny character. She's so good.
And for the first time in this book, it's only her. We see her thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's always thought bubbles whenever she's in a panel. And there's one great bit. She hates Devin because we were talking all about me, and then this boy has come and made it all about him. I just like how, like, realistic the talk between these 9-year-olds feels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially Eduardo, like, yes. is a really, really strong character. I really like Princess as a foil to Moon Girl.
Yep.
Like almost like the polar opposite of everything that Moon Girl is, except they're both very stubborn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the finale of this sees Devin kidnapped by the Wrecking crew.
It's great.
Yeah,
and it continues to be excellent. The art's so lovely by Natasha Bustos and colors by Tamara Bombion. It's always going to be beautiful. And I like that it's like, it's a proper all ages book, you know, like it's fun to read and it's good, but it's also about sort of themes of fitting in and bullying and school.
But it's really good.
It's cool. I like it.
I didn't love the last arc to get where they're in space and she was separated from Devil's Dinosaur, but this is like my favorite arc in a long time on this run.
Also, I want that sweatshirt that just says lunch.
Someone get Siobhan a lunch sweatshirt. I'm just going to start asking for things and maybe Wayne will conjure them for us.
And that was amazing. He's like, I knitted it while you were talking.
We got a third issue of Black Panther this week, written by Ta-Nehisi Coates, with art by Daniel Acuna, who colors his own work, I think. He's a very, very good artist and the perfect fit for this crazy story set in the future in space, in which T'Challa has kind of woken up in this future world where he is kind of viewed as this forgotten legend, and Wakandans are like this, you know, one of the most present races in space.
Mm-hmm.
This is just crazy, this book. I can't believe it exists. And there's a massive reveal at the end of as someone storms in that is a callback to it's the future version of Manifold. Someone has become the Manifold. I mean, he says, I am the Manifold.
No, but I just didn't make that connection for some reason because I'm an idiot. But I'm into it.
Yeah, we love Manifold here. And if he becomes an evil space robot in the future, I'm still a big fan.
And I love the idea that, like, somehow, even though this is a future where the Wakandan Empire has, like, conquered all of space, somehow it's the real T'Challa. Like, it's our T'Challa who's traveled forward in time
space
but doesn't have his memories. It's good.
It's really cool. It's so different and weird. And, I just love what a massive change-up this is to what Coates was doing on the book.
Absolutely.
3 issues ago.
And it's fun. Like, it's a sort of, you know, again, like a lot of Coates' work, it's a commentary on empires and... colonialism.
Yeah, definitely. I'm into it. It's great. Black Panther is also a member of the Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Siobhan, the Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
And Jason Aaron wrote issue number 6 this week, which featured art by Ed McGuinness and Paco Medina. Also inks by Mike Morales and Juan Velasco and colors by David Curiel. And we are now at the finale of this arc, which was essentially setting up the team of Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Black Panther, Ghost Rider, She-Hulk, and Doctor Strange, and Captain Marvel, who's not on the cover for some reason. this book really took its time getting to a point where I got interested in it, and it still hasn't really gotten there.
Mm.
The whole thing is kind of setting up, the reason everyone in the Marvel Universe has powers is because a Celestial died on Earth millions of years ago.
And I don't care.
That's how they. That's why they have their powers.
That's not a question that needed to be answered.
But
they
just
have powers.
Well, I mean, you know, I really loved that Avengers. What is it? A million BC or whatever
it was. Cool.
So that's what issue 7 is going to be all about. We have an issue all about the Ghost Rider who rides a woolly mammoth.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
It's
that's
issue
fun.
Number 7. So I advise you pick that one up for the next issue. All you need to know is that they were assembled.
Yes,
that's we took 6 issues, and now the Avengers have been assembled. I really hope Jason Aaron does great things with this book, but so far it's been pretty middling. The Sentry this week. We haven't talked about the Lemire book in a while. And he wrote The Sentry, issue number 3, Jeff Lemire, with art by Kim Jacinto and Joshua Cassara, colors by Rain Barreto. And this is a very, very gloomy superhero book. People have kind of called it like Marvel's answer to Mr. Miracle, but Jeff Lemire is writing it, so it's a lot more interesting. Yes. And basically, the Sentry, who was at one point the most powerful being in the Marvel Universe, has to live a kind of like boring life in which he works in a diner by the day. And then when he goes home at night, he fights the Void, who lives within his head. But in his head, he can also be a powerful being again.
And he has to check in once a day and go in and defeat the Void. Otherwise, the Void will escape into our universe.
That's right.
Which would be a problem.
In the second issue, he is betrayed by his best friend. And we learn that he's kind of like responsible for this, his ability to get back into this world and, mm-hmm. and defeat the Void disappearing. Mm-hmm. And this issue kind of fills in the blanks that we weren't aware of in issue 1 and 2, in which Bob's sidekick meets up with his one-time arch enemy, mm-hmm. and the two kind of plot their evil doings.
It's very good.
It's really, really good.
I very much enjoy this.
Yeah, and I, you know, we say a lot about how great the writing is, but Kim Jacinto's art is phenomenal on this.
It's perfect. It's really pitch perfect.
And I've only really seen him do, like, I think he did some Avengers issues last year.
Or, okay. And yeah, I'm not super familiar.
Just a name that I'm familiar with, but certainly never really took notice of him as an artist beyond, like, you know, oh, this is good art. This is, like, you know, this is really, really unique art with great panel layouts. The excellent final pages of this book are just so good. And really, really differently styled. The look of anguish and pain on Bob's face as he discovers his world is crumbling around him. Like, it's so good.
So good.
I really, really love this series. And I wasn't expecting to, because who gives a shit about the Sentry? This is cool shit, though.
It's really cool shit. And it's just a mini series, right? It's just a 6-issue mini?
They haven't said how many. Mm. Well, it's the Marvel way.
It's great.
Yeah. Really into it. Before we talk about Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, no, why don't you tell me, what's the main thing Peter Parker is dealing with in Spider-Man at the moment?
He has been separated from Spider-Man, and so Peter Parker has all of the responsibility, but none of the power, and Spider-Man has all of the power and none of the responsibility.
So, in issue 4 of Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man fights Peter Parker. Guess what happens in issue 607 of Daredevil?
Daredevil fights
It's the return of Mike Murdock.
Oh.
Did you ever read any Daredevil issues? Basically, he invented a twin brother to explain. This is like long, long ago. Early in his career, he was having trouble with his secret identity, and people were starting to put together that Daredevil might be Matt Murdock. So he invented a twin brother called Mike Murdock, and basically, people, like, Karen fell in love with Mike Murdock.
Oh,
and,
my God.
He ended up having to, like basically set up that Mike Murdock died.
That's, like, that is a pretty classic Daredevil problem to invent for himself.
Totally. And so Charles Soule writes Daredevil now, and it's been up and down. I kind of check in, check out. I can't properly give it up because I like Charles Soule, and I like Daredevil. He's one of my favorite superheroes. I picked this one up because it's Charles Soule writing it with Phil Noto.
It's a good cover. It's a great cover. I nearly picked it up just for the cover.
And the art inside is excellent. But you're going to love this.
Yes,
so Charles Soule, before doing Daredevil, was doing all the Inhumans books over at Marvel. Mm-hmm. And some of the new characters that he invented for Inhumans were Frank McGee, that mm-hmm. awesome cool cop that can blind people with his eyes.
Yep.
And then Reader, who is a blind Inhuman who three times a day can read something, and whatever he reads with Braille
mm-hmm.
Comes true, or he creates, or
manifests. He's like the secret.
So he basically, Matt Murdock hired these team of Inhumans to basically try and discredit the Kingpin for being the mayor.
Okay.
And while reading through,
I love how he's like the law, except for me.
Yeah. While reading these exhaustive files that Matt Murdock gave him, Reader falls asleep. And when he falls asleep, his powers recharge. And when he wakes up, he's reading about Mike Murdock. So he has manifested this character that Matt Murdock invented as a secret identity. And so Mike Murdock now exists.
Great.
And he's like an evil version of Matt Murdock, who doesn't know that Matt Murdock is Daredevil.
Why is he evil?
Because he figures out that Matt Murdock wants to, you know, remove him from existence.
Ah, right.
That'll turn anybody evil. I just, fair enough. It's so weird.
That's pretty funny.
It's nothing like the last arc of this this series. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm on board. This is
great.
That's
some proper superhero silliness.
Yeah. I like that. If you like superhero silliness, it's the issue before this arc started, 606. Go pick it up. It has great art by Phil Noto and really fun writing by Charles Soule, featuring characters that Charles Soule was very fond of in the old Inhumans characters.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, over to Spider-Man right now. Issue number 4 this week, written by Nick Spencer with art by Ryan Ottley and inks by Cliff Rathburn, colors by Laura Martin. We see that Peter Parker and Spider-Man have been separated due to some cool technology that links back to how Spider-Man got his super spider powers to begin with. And we also learn that the same rats that had this experimented on as well are now dying. Mm-hmm. So basically,
there's a ticking clock there.
Yeah, Peter Parker has to convince Spider-Man to, I guess, reform with him and so that the two can become one. But Spider-Man views Peter Parker as just a complete loser.
Yeah.
Who, you know, he was the reason why Spider-Man's life sucked before this. So why would he spend any time with him? And also this Spider-Man is like really reckless and is like...
And he doesn't remember Uncle Ben. He doesn't have the key thing. I like this because Nick Spencer is doing like what Nick Spencer does, where he takes like a sort of fundamental core element of the superhero thing and he does something a bit fun with it.
Mm.
I feel like he could do a lot less in terms of dialogue. Just dial it back. Doesn't need as many like arrested development.
Especially when this book is coming out every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I would like a little less Spidey.
Just a touch less.
All the while we have someone who I'm not aware of at all. Mendel Strom.
Yeah. I've heard of him like, but this is the joke. He's like a shit Spidey villain.
Yeah.
Who thinks that he's Spider-Man's greatest foe, but he is not.
He actually looks way more like a character straight out of Invincible than he does Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's because Ryan Ottley is on the art. And God, killing I love it. Ryan Ottley's art is just so good. And I'm the most worrying thing about this being double shipping is I know very soon Ryan Ottley is not going to do an issue. And is that where this all falls apart and I stop reading the series?
I don't know. I hope that they gave him like a good lead time. You
but,
know?
No, but even still, like, how long can you do two issues a month?
Yeah, totally.
I hate double shipping.
I hate it.
It's so bad.
Stop doing it.
Because it makes us talk about the same books more often on the podcast.
Yeah, which is the main problem.
No, but also, it's like, you know, from an art point of view. Yeah, it's expensive for readers, and readers are less inclined to kind of try new things because, the Flash comes out every 2 weeks. Batman comes out every 2 weeks. Spider-Man every 2 weeks. Avengers every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's
so hard on creators. It's so unfair, I think. It's just ludicrous.
I don't know the cons are that it makes the publishers more money, but kind of.
Yeah, not really.
Because I feel like people would be reading more, I don't know. But then there are examples where it does work. Like, I really loved when Wonder Woman was written by Greg Rucka and he had two timelines with different artists, so it still stuck with those artists the whole way through.
But man, like, those artists were under the pump.
Yeah, totally.
I have a question. So at the beginning, each issue has had like a one-page little someone appearing to be hunted. Do you think that's a Kraven thing? Do you think that's going to be a Kraven reference?
Unless they pull the rug out from us. But yeah, I figure it's going to be the return of Kraven.
I hope so. But good Kraven.
I want good Kraven, yeah, because I want...
What is his name? Sergei the...
The unhunted, unhuntable.
the unhuntable Sergei. Love it.
I want everything that happens in Squirrel Girl to be just considered canon forever.
Absolutely.
How amazing would that be if Ryan North made all decisions for all Marvel books and movies?
I think it would be a much better universe, frankly.
Spider-Man. It's still good. It's still really good. I have that fear in the back of my mind that a new artist is going to be there. It's not going to be Ottley.
Mm.
Tell me about The Life of Captain Marvel.
So this is issue 2 of The Life of Captain Marvel, written by Margaret Stahl, penciled, half penciled by Carlos Pacheco. Oh God. And inks by Rafael Fontrez, and Marguerite Savage does the, flashbacks, and colors by Marcio Menez. And this is like 50%. We're getting a bit more backstory about Carol and her family and pretty much like her fucked up home life. Back in, where are they supposed to be? Everyone has funny accents. Boston, maybe? Everyone has, like, Boston accents. Or New England, something like that. Anyway, So Carol's back and her brother has a brain injury, so she's been staying at home to help her mom look after her brother. But everyone's like, maybe you should go and be a superhero again. And then she discovers a letter that means that her dad was probably cheating on her mom. And she's like, oh, no, family drama. It's such an issue. But then also a space alien lady has landed. So now it's going to actually be some superhero shit.
Cool.
But actually, the first issue, I was like, no, I don't care about this. This is boring. I don't care about Carol's home life. But it's really, in one issue, it's really grown on me. The
second
issue was really good. I don't like the colors, but the art's really serviceable. I like learning a bit more about her history. It makes her like a tiny bit more interesting and relatable and well-rounded. And it looks like it's about to become some cool superhero stuff, and I'm into it.
Okay, I just might read this.
Yeah. Look, I genuinely think it's worth it.
Okay, great. Venom gave us issue number 5 this week by Donny Cates, Ryan Stegman, J.P. Mayer, and Frank Martin. Actually, just in saying Donny Cates' name and Stegman's name, who also have faux rivalries with Chip Zdarsky on Twitter. I forgot that we forgot to mention the best part of Punisher number 1 at the start of the episode is that a character called Zdarsky dies, which is if you don't follow all those creators on Twitter, it's reason enough to get Twitter.
Absolutely.
Because they just have this funny faux kind of beef.
Funny beefs.
That is Chip's the best at and everyone else is pretty good at. But yeah, Ryan Stegman and Donny Cates team up for Venom, and it's definitely the book that Stegman was born to draw. It's so fun seeing him draw these like enormous kind of like winged Venom beasts in this, and it kind of exploring like this deeper lore of where the symbiote comes from, which I did like, just like, you know, you were saying you don't care about learning more about Carol's home life. I didn't think I needed to learn more about the history of the symbiote, but they're doing really, really fun stuff with this, like, you know, weird alien suit and where it comes from and what it's meant to be doing in the world and what it's connected to. There's a fun kind of twist in this issue, and we now see kind of like, yeah, Venom kind of suit up for war, and there's there's another voice in his head. So it's three people making up, so it's him talking to two people now instead of one.
Oh man.
And he's you know, when he talks to the symbiote. It's fun. It's really fun. I really, really like this series. It's great. And I think Donny Cates is just a very good get for Marvel.
He's just having fun.
Yeah, he really is, and I can't really fault anything that he's done so far at Marvel. I just really enjoy it. He writes immensely readable comics.
Absolutely.
Finally, from Marvel, issue 20 of Star Wars: Darth Vader, again written by Charles Soule with excellent art by Giuseppe Camuncoli, who, but just give it to him, he's the best artist to have worked on a Star Wars book so far. Maybe discluding Stuart Eminem. These are certainly better issues, though. It finishes by Danielle Orlandini and colors by Dono Sanchez Almara and Eric Arciniega. This whole story is how Darth Vader, you know, that massive lava covered fortress that Darth Vader has.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
he has it, and this is the story of how he got it. And it's him kind of like doing missions for the Emperor and being given this. He basically wants his own planet in return. It's like, there's this great...
It's not too much to ask, is it?
No, so there's an excellent action sequence at the end as he kills these two final Jedi that he's been with for this series. And then we have this really kind of fun discussion between him and the Emperor, where the Emperor is kind of like scolding him and then turning face and then praising him for the good that he's done and that he wants to give him a world to say thanks. It's good shit. I'm 20 issues in. I didn't think I would stick with this as long as I have.
I'm surprised.
It's good. I've dropped everything else related to Star Wars and comics, but this is very good. Now that we've done Marvel, DC, and Image, it's time to go over to other publishers and head back to the Jeff Lemire well, because he released issue 4 of his great series, Black Hammer, Age of Doom, this week, featuring art by Dean Ormston, colors by Dave Stewart, letters by Todd Klein. And
this was the book that made me go, oh, shit!
So let's go through all the spectrum of Lemire comic emotions this week.
Yeah.
Royal City made you cry. Black Hammer made you go, oh shit! What did The Terrifics do? Lament that Doc Shayna wasn't on anymore.
Yeah, but also made me go, hubba, hubba. Metamorpho was very handsome when he stopped being Metamorpho.
That's very true. I think he's more handsome when he is Metamorpho.
Yeah.
I'd love an element wife.
Yeah,
what
else?
Was the other one? Sentry made you... hubba, hubba. Yeah. That beard. Black Hammer Age of Doom is they finally put the, like, they drop it.
We find out. Oh man, it's a big fucking heart, like, punch in the gut reveal as well.
Totally.
I wasn't expecting that.
So Black Hammer is all about a bunch of misplaced superheroes who
Golden Age superheroes
stuck in a kind of like
small town.
A small town that they can't leave, where no one knows that they're superheroes. They have to keep it secret, and it's really, really frustrating for all of them because they've been stuck here for years and they've, you know, left their past lives behind. And the daughter of the deceased Black Hammer has come to find them, but has now that she's here, she can't get anywhere in her investigation because there are forces at play that might be coming from within the team. And in this issue, we learn the beginning. We learn what the secret is.
Yeah.
We don't know why or how.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing final page reveal.
It really is.
And I cannot wait to see how this miniseries. I don't know what the plan is with Black Hammer, but I can't wait to see how this continues.
Yeah, it's so good. Fuck, it's so good. Everyone should read this. It's like a pure distillation of what's great about superhero comics, told by one of the absolute masters, contemporary masters of the form.
Yeah, definitely. And there's really, really human moments within this comic because it is like, yeah, like a big thick slathering of Lemire-esque depression on every page because it's, you know, he's so good at writing superhero books in which they're not allowed to be superheroes anymore for whatever reason.
Absolutely.
I just, when he does do something that is just so unmistakably comic book bullshit, I'm so excited.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what this big reveal is.
Oh, man.
One of the best issues I read this week.
But read it, guys. Fucking go read it, mate.
I mean, we definitely owe the world a big spoiler-filled Lemire episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you want to get access to all of these big bonus episodes that we've been putting out lately, we've done some great ones recently. Saga and Kill or Be Killed have both gotten big deep dive specials. You can find them over on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/serious issues podcast. We've quite a few people signing up at the very, we've got a pretty fun $2 level that gets you access to some bonus episodes and. It's really cool over there. If it's a great way to support the show, however much money you're able to support us with each month goes a long way with us.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps Siobhan full of chicken soup.
I've genuinely needed a lot of chicken soup lately.
But Black Hammer definitely deserves a long discussion where we can go through spoilers in the future because this book is fucking great.
It's so good.
So you read a Valiant book this week.
I did. I read Britannia, Lost Eagles of Rome by Peter Milligan, Robert Gill, and Jose Villarubia. And this is the detective story set in ancient Rome. Ancient Rome. Under the rule of Nero, we have the world's first detectioner. It's pretty, like, this is a lame book. I wouldn't necessarily be like, this is a cool book for cool people who like cool comic books. This is a lame book for lamos who like history, like me. And in this, we see our detectioner and his lady gladiator teammate go to Egypt and go to find out some secrets from the Library of Alexandria, which gets burned down while they're there. Great. I love it. It's good fun. They're trying to find some eagles that got lost in a war with Germans. And Nero's like, bring back the eagles or everyone will hate me.
Because Nero sucks.
Nero sucks. He's a big jerk. I just think it's really fun. It's really different to everything else. I like that Valiant are putting this out. It's always on nice paper stock. Peter Milligan does a good job of all the dialogue. It's silly as all hell, but it's like another detective story.
Great. Awesome stuff.
Yeah.
So one book that I was very surprised that I liked so much was The Regular Show, 25 Years Later. This is a book that basically is 25 years after into the future of the Regular Show Cartoon Network series, starring Mordecai and Rigby, two animals who work in a park, who are always irresponsible and allow monsters to fuck their lives up. But as they grow up into adults, they learn responsibility and they become really cool dads. Mm. But while kind of rekindling their youth when they go back to the park as adults with their children, they fuck up and accidentally trade their children for their youth.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're young and dumb again, and they need to save their children from an evil wizard.
Oh, no.
And they do decide to do that by making a deal with the wizard that if they can raise his son to be a good person, he'll give their children back.
That's really funny.
It's written by Christopher Hastings, and art is by Anna Johnstone, with colors by Joanna Lafuente.
Great.
Who does Fence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fucking great.
That's so silly, but that sounds so fun.
It's so great, and because it's in this alternate you know, future reality. The stakes feel real in it. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't really know what's going to happen. And I am really happy to find, like, I'm keen to find out how this wraps up. And it's a really, really clever idea, like, you know, to give us the grown-up adult versions of these two idiots that we've watched so many episodes of. It's really, really good. If you are a fan of the series, this is way more in line with what a comic... what I wanted this comic to be when they originally did the regular show comic, which was instead like just a bunch of short stories together you finish it like, oh, I don't even read this. Like, you know, it's not as good as the show. This is something completely different from the show that's perfectly in tone with what the show was.
Yeah, cool.
Really good. Regular show, 25 years later. Definitely check it out if you're a fan of that show. Speaking of weird franchise comics, every quarter...
I love Mega Man.
I'm blessed with a new issue of Mega Man Master Mix, which is by Hitoshi Ariga with translations by Josh Perez, and this is the fully color version of the manga stories of Mega Man, the excellent Capcom character. And each issue of this is the third issue so far, each issue basically tells the story behind the Mega Man games. We're still in the NES era, so of course issue 3 is Mega Man 3, but they're splitting it up into two issues because this is the first Mega Man game where they tried to kind of give it a story. So the creator of Mega Man, Dr. Light, has to work with Dr. Wily, who is the kind of the main antagonist who creates all the bad robots that Mega Man has to fight in the video games. They have to work together, and of course Dr. Wily quickly betrays Dr. Light and Mega Man, and he has to fight a bunch of robots. It's so mindlessly silly and fun, and it is like... like, as a manga fan, you have to appreciate some of these amazing panels of robots fighting in space.
Yeah.
But
also, just read Astro Boy, guys.
Yeah, sure. But they're not putting out Astro Boy comics every week.
No, but you can get the omnibuses.
Omnibuses are heavy.
They're small. They're pocket omnibuses.
Oh, okay. That's all right. You didn't say.
They're actually great.
Big difference. But yeah, I love this. If you're a fan of the video games, which it should be some of the best video games ever made, this is the kind of additional lore that is worth your time, as opposed to just being some bullshit that you know are only spending because you're already a fan. This only makes you more of a fan of the thing that you're already a fan of.
That's nice.
Mega Man Master Mix. It comes out through Udon, who do some great manga translations. That is it for this week. We have all those comics reviewed for you. Hopefully there's some new recommendations that you can check out. Next week, Siobhan, are you ready for one of the worst weeks of your year?
Oh my god, why?
Next week is the we're getting the four issues of DC crossed over with Looney Tunes.
Oh yeah.
Including the Joker Daffy Duck special.
No.
Written by Scott Lobdell.
No.
I'll
read the Mark Russell one, but I'm not going to
read
it.
What about the Gail Simone Catwoman Tweety Pie?
Blah 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 blah, fine.
Maybe. You have to read all of them. It's the rule. I demand it. Because you weren't even here the last time they had one.
I know.
For the last Hanna-Barbera DC episode.
All right.
You got to read these ones.
Fine.
Other than that, there's like two new Venom titles starting.
What?
One of them is called Venom.
No.
But
It's
like Vietnam, and it has a Goran Pavlov comic, the guy who did the excellent Punisher series recently.
Yep.
With Garth Ennis.
I guess I'll read that.
Yeah. Oh, what the fuck? We're already getting issue number 7 of Avengers. Like, we just got issue number 6. Fucking double shipping.
Down,
but you
everyone.
Should read that one. Read that one. That one's going to be good, I reckon.
All right.
Got some new Batgirl. I'm reading alphabetically.
Yeah,
you can't see much of the other good stuff?
Not really.
I reckon there's going to be a bunch of good stuff. Get a new issue of Euthanauts, that Teeny Howard book for Thingo.
Harbinger Wars, issue 4.
Oh, cool.
I'll read that.
Judge Dredd. I don't even read that anymore. Oh, the Judas Trade comes out. That was a great series by Jeff Loveness.
I said I'd pick that up for Nate's dad.
That's
a
right.
Preacher.
Yeah.
Sounded interested.
Highly
also
recommend
Zombie
that.
Tramp 51. I will not be picking that up.
Zombie Tram?
Tramp.
Oh, right. I thought it was like a tram full of zombies. That sounds good. Someone make that. Wayne. Well, you're right. Next week is not that exciting.
Yeah, that's nice. It's a small week.
Because it's the last week of the month. It's always a little bit quieter.
But we do get Solar, issue 5.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very excited about.
Issue number 2 of The New World.
Yes, please.
By Ellis Cott and Trad Moore. That's exciting. Yes, please. Well, do you guys like this extra segment where we just slowly go through all of next week's releases and find things that we're vaguely interested in? Scarlet, The Bendis and Maleev book?
Runaways, yes, please.
Oh, good. Runaways. It's a Stray Bullets week. Oh, no, it's a trade. Damn it, I've already read that.
Moon Knight, good.
Do we like Submerged, the Vita Ayala? Oh,
X-23.
That's good. That's some good stuff.
Yeah.
There's a book called... Oh, I know. Don't worry about it. We're good. All right, great segment.
Yeah, loved it.
If you want more Levins and Siobhan, slowly read through next week's books. If you want that to be a recurring segment... let us know. You can get in contact with us at seriousissues@kingscomics.com mm-hmm. is our email address, or you can find us online at facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. We are on Twitter, serious_issues. Thanks so much to our listener, Rebecca, for always being more active yes. in regards to us on Twitter in recommending the show to people than
yeah,
we are.
Thank you.
This morning she recommended us to the artist Mark Lamming. That's nice.
That's very nice. Okay.
And
she also always tags me in pictures of shirtless dudes. Thanks.
That's real cool.
Yeah.
And
I appreciate it.
Siobhan, you can do that too at Siobhan CBG for Siobhan.
Yeah, feel free.
I'm at Levdog, LEVDOWG. And that's it.
Yeah.
Support us on Patreon, patreon.com/serious issues podcast. If enough people sign up, we'll do an entire hour of Siobhan and I slowly reading through new releases and looking for things that we're interested in. Because it's riveting podcasting.
It sounds good.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.